everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. It's such a pleasure having you join me today because, as always, this is an opportunity to have an in-depth conversation about topics that are quite profound for you, that support you in empowering yourself and your health, and just keeping you on the leading edge, your eyes wide open to what's going on, which is the greatest gift we can give ourselves. I want to remind everyone, if you have not had a chance to visit my website, please do so, because I've got some special gifts. When you opt into my newsletter, there's going to be some new special reports, some ebooks that are going to be available for free. Of course, there are tons of articles already there, lots of educational material. So feel free, take advantage of that. And also my Facebook page is really active. I like to post several times a day. I've really gotten into it now. So be sure you go over there, like me on What Women Must Know, because it's another place to stay up to date with things. So today we're going to be talking about quite a powerful topic. We are very fortunate because we have with us today Jeffrey Smith, who is the man leading the charge and has for many, many years revealing the truth and dangers of GMOs. And that's the topic of our conversation today. We're going to be revealing the truth about GMOs and how they impact your health and your hormones, some of the leading edge research and information, and how you can take action in your life. So this is a profound topic, and I'm going to start off by just introducing all of you to my guest, Jeffrey Smith, who is an international best-selling author, award-winning filmmaker, executive director of the Institute of Responsible Technology, and the leading spokesperson on the health dangers of GMOs. The most recognized consumer advocate promoting healthier non-GMO choices, Jeffrey Smith's meticulous research documents how biotech companies continue to mislead legislators and safety officials to put the health of society at risk and the environment in peril. His work expertly summarizes why the safety assessments conducted by the FDA and regulators worldwide teeter on a foundation of outdated science and false assumptions, and why genetically engineered foods must urgently become our nation's top food safety priority. His books include Seeds of Deception, Exposing Industry and Government Lies About the Safety of the Genetically Engineered Foods You Eat, the world's best-selling on GMO, and Genetic Roulette, The Documented Health Risks of Genetically Engineered Foods, the authoritative work on GMO health dangers. Jeffrey Smith is the founding executive director of the Institute for Responsible Technology, the most comprehensive source of GMO health risk information for consumers, policymakers, and healthcare professionals. The Institute's educational programs are driving the tipping point of consumer rejection against GMOs, which is already starting to push genetically engineered ingredients out of the market in the U.S. And he lives in Iowa, ironically surrounded by genetically modified soybeans and corn. And welcome, Jeffrey Smith, to the show today.
Thank you.
It is ironic, don't you think?
Yes, it is. Living in Iowa, surrounded by GMOs. Everyone in Iowa is surrounded by GMOs. If you go out a little bit to the town's edge, all you see is Monsanto, Monsanto, Monsanto.
Well, you know, you can't forget your purpose, can you?
Like, no, not at all.
It's surrounding you. So today I would like our show to begin to educate everyone listening about GMOs. I know everyone has heard the term GMOs, but I don't know how many of us truly understand what that means and why there is such a profound risk involved with how GMOs are entering our entire food supply, not just in the U.S., it's infiltrating around the world. So let's start with that, and then we can proceed from there, Jeffrey. So just give us a kind of your basic primer on what are GMO. What are GMOs?
GMO means genetically modified organism, and this is a laboratory technique where you can take genes from one species like bacteria or viruses and force them into the DNA of other species. Now, they can mix and match combinations that are absolutely, completely unnatural, in some cases bizarre. They've put spider genes into goats in the hopes that they can milk the goat to get spider web protein out of the milk to make bulletproof vests. They've put human genes into corn to make spermicide. They've had pigs with cowhide. So they can mix and match across kingdoms and species. In the food that we eat, there are 9 genetically modified food crops, and they are primarily engineered not to die when sprayed with herbicides. So you have, for example, Roundup Ready soybeans that can be sprayed with Monsanto's Roundup herbicide, which gets absorbed into the soybeans and eaten by us, and that's a big problem. And you have a secondary trait, which is found, for example, in corn, where the corn produces its own toxic insecticide called BT toxin that breaks open little holes in the stomachs of the insects to kill them, and it turns out it pokes holes in human cells as well, and that's also a problem. But essentially, you have 9 GM food crops, and the biotech industry wants to expand that to every commercial seed, as well as livestock, fish, insects, trees, etc.
Well, so really, the big plan for Monsanto is to take over every aspect of agriculture and husbandry with GMO organisms.
And that's not just speculation. Their consultant, Arthur Anderson, in 1999 in a January conference in San Francisco, revealed how they had worked with Monsanto executives by first asking them what their ideal future was in 15 to 20 years. And it was to, in fact, genetically engineer 100% of all commercial seeds in the world and patent them. And Anderson worked backwards from that goal to create the strategy and tactics to achieve it. So there, this one company and the 4 others now that are working alongside plan to replace nature, to eliminate the products of the billions of years of evolution and replace it with a technology which is known to create unpredicted side effects, and yet the crops that are approved and put on the market have very little safety studies whatsoever. Most of the potential dangers go unevaluated, and we now believe that they are one of the most serious health problems in the United States, causing huge numbers of increase in diseases that would turn out, not coincidentally, to be rising along the parallel increase in the use of these crops in our diet.
I mean, this is a sinister plot. I mean, if we really understand the intention, it boggles the mind that this is really the goal of Monsanto, is really taking over and have total control of the world's food supply and everything else associated with it, basically.
And they have done an amazing job of corrupting governments in order to make this happen. I think it's easiest for us to relate to the Food and Drug Administration in Washington, where Michael Taylor, Monsanto's former attorney, was placed in charge of FDA policy when GMO policy was written. And the policy that he oversaw described that the agency wasn't aware of any information showing that GMOs were significantly different, and therefore no safety studies were necessary and no labeling was necessary. Well, that sentence and justification for no testing turned out to be a complete lie, a fraud. It turns out that the overwhelming consensus among the scientists working at the FDA, as revealed by documents made public from a lawsuit, was exactly the opposite, that GMOs, in their opinion, were different and dangerous and needed to be tested, but they were ignored and denied. And then Michael Taylor went on to become Monsanto's vice president, and now under Obama, he's back at the FDA as the U.S. food safety czar.
Oh, this sends shivers on my spine. This is a really big story. This is huge. This is affecting every single person in the United States, and really it's spreading out around the world. I want to just ask you to name those 9 foods right now that are the primary GMO modified foods.
All right, and if someone is listening and they can't write it down, they can always go to non-GMOshoppingguide.com. They're listed there, and also download the iPhone application Shop No GMO. And we have about 16,000 products at this point verified non-GMO on the list from the Non-GMO Project. And of course the there's also the 9 GM food crops, and we list a lot of their derivatives. That's because soy and corn are the most common GM crops in our food supply, because the soy derivatives and corn derivatives are practically omnipresent. You also have canola and cotton, which produce oil, cottonseed oil and canola oil. There's sugar beets, not the table beets that you cut up, but if you buy something that contains sugar, then more than 50% comes from beets that are called sugar beets, and those are genetically engineered. You also have papaya from Hawaii or China, some zucchini and yellow squash, as well as alfalfa, which is used for hay for animals. In fact, the soy, corn, cottonseed, canola, and alfalfa and sugar beet pulp are all used as animal feed, so that raises another major category, milk, meat, and eggs from animals fed GMOs, which carries unique risks. In fact, the FDA Center for Veterinary Medicine repeatedly warned that these milk and meat of animals fed GMOs carry unique risks, but they have not been evaluated and their warnings went unheeded.
Well, so, you know, if you just go and buy some milk or get some eggs or, you know, have beef, I mean, unless it's stipulated that these animals are not fed GMO foods, then I don't know, are they? I guess if you're eating organic foods, they're non-GMO. That's the only way you would know, correct?
If it's organic, if it's 100% grass-fed with no GM alfalfa as part of that grass, or if it's wild-caught, then you are likely eating something without GMOs. Some contamination can occur even in the organic line, but it would be very small.
So it's ubiquitous. We are getting more and more limited in our options these days.
And I traveled about 8 months out of 12 last year and was able to avoid it on the road. So there's ways to do it, even in restaurants, when you particularly avoid the oils from genetically modified soy, corn, or canola. So I would go to places that used olive oil or buy things that didn't require oil, because so many of the restaurants use genetically modified oils. And many of the other GMOs are completely visible for products that are cooked from scratch that are not processed. So you have corn tortillas and polenta and tofu. Those would all be genetically engineered if it didn't say non-GMO or organic. So you can avoid most of the GMOs just by knowing what to avoid in a menu that's cooked from scratch, but you also have to ask about the hidden ingredients, which would be the salad dressing, the oil, the sugar, etc.
Wow. So let's talk about why you want to avoid any food that has been genetically modified. Let's look at some of the health risks associated based on research.
Well, the American Academy of Environmental Medicine looked at the animal feeding studies 5 years ago and determined at that point, and there's many that have come since, that there was already enough evidence to raise the alarm. They said every physician in America should tell their patients stop eating GMOs, because the rats and the mice that were fed GMOs in laboratory-controlled conditions suffered from gastrointestinal disorders. They suffered from reproductive problems, immune problems, organ damage, accelerated aging, dysfunctional regulation of cholesterol and insulin. And when the doctors started prescribing non-GMO diets, which is now by the thousands and thousands, they reported that their patients started getting better from these same type of things, the GI tract disorders, the organ damage, the asthma and immune system problems like allergies. So we've seen this over and over again. We've collected all sorts of anecdotal evidence from people that match up with the research. Then you also have livestock that are taken off of GM soy or corn and substituting with non-GM soy or corn. Unlike humans, where they have to buy organic or reduce processed foods in order to create a strategy to avoid these unlabeled GMOs, the livestock have no potential cofactors that would would confound the analysis of what in fact is causing the animals to get better. So when the pigs are taken off of GM soy, within 2 days in one farm the diarrhea that was killing pigs disappeared. In another farm, the behavior of the animals changed, and there was a 75% reduction in medicine use. We see an increase in conception rate and litter size, overall health, energy, well-being, and we see that also in pets. We have now a video we're working on with pet owners and veterinarians talking about the benefits to their animals when they're taking them off GM pet food. When you look at the disorders and diseases that we think are related to GMOs, and you compare their incidence with the rise of the use of GMOs, the charts look astounding. You see gastrointestinal problems like inflammatory bowel, irritable bowel, chronic constipation, death from intestinal infection, peritonitis, all tracking with GMO rise. You see autism and deaths from senile dementia and Parkinson's. You see cancers like liver, kidney, and thyroid cancer tracking with the introduction of or the use of Roundup and Roundup-ready crops in our diet. You see obesity and high blood pressure, thyroid conditions, all sorts of problems related to that we think are related to GMOs on the rise since GMOs were introduced. Now, if you look at the two main toxins found in GMOs, Roundup herbicide, which is sprayed on the crops and soaked into it, or the toxin, the BT toxin, which is produced by corn and cotton plants, they actually would predispose us and animals to these same conditions. So we see a pattern of the same type of problems in lab animals, humans, pets, livestock, and national statistics, and you see the chemical or biochemical properties of the toxins used in GMOs that could explain it. Now, I should focus just for a moment on the Roundup, because Roundup is told, we're told by Monsanto for years that it's safe. It turns out it's now being described as one of the most chronically toxic chemicals on the planet. A study came out reviewing the properties of Roundup in May of 2013, and it linked Roundup to cancer, heart disease, obesity, diabetes, autism, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, multiple sclerosis, anxiety, depression, aggression, and anorexia nervosa, among others. The same authors just related it to gluten-related disorders in a paper that came out this year, as well as chronic kidney failure. So we see a tremendous problem with just the Roundup portion of these Roundup-ready crops. Then you have the BT toxin, which pokes holes in insect cells to kill them. It turns out in 2012 it was discovered to poke holes in human cells causing leakage, and it was found in the blood of 93% of the pregnant women tested, in 80% of their unborn fetuses. A hole-poking toxin in the blood of fetuses is a very dangerous thing because the blood-brain barrier is not well developed, so we might cause problems in the brain cells of this generation. So we have a very, very serious load of toxins, which can also be a load of allergens. BT toxin has been linked to immune system responses in humans and in animals. The Environmental Protection Agency Scientific Advisory Panel sternly warned about this possibility. It was ignored by the EPA, which just waved the BT toxin pesticide in our crops onto the market without any real testing strategy.
Well, I'm sure everyone else listening needs to take a deep breath after hearing what you've just shared with us, because it's so overwhelming. It's just so overwhelming. The question I have, if you can kind of help us understand, what is it about these genetically modified foods that are so damaging, so harm-producing to our system, so systemically compromising our health?
That's an excellent question, and I want to break it down into categories. The first category we've already mentioned is that these herbicide-tolerant crops are soaked with herbicide, and so we get really high concentrations. I was reading an article today where Monsanto suggested that anything above a 5.6 level of milligrams per kilogram would be an extreme level and extremely rare. it turns out that's way below what they're finding now in these Roundup-ready crops, a much higher level than Monsanto ever wanted to admit. And in order to even allow these, regulatory agencies have increased the allowable herbicide residues by 200-fold, and in some cases even more, because they don't base it on health, they base it on what level of residues are going to end up in the food, and they just want to legalize that. So eating GMOs is really eating pesticide plants, whether it's the Roundup that's sprayed on the plants or the BT toxin, which is produced in corn that ends up in our blood, in the blood of the unborn fetus. So that's two different categories, the chemicals they put on the GM crops and the toxin produced from the inserted gene, in that case it's the BT toxin, in corn. Another category is that the process of genetic engineering itself causes massive collateral damage in the DNA of the plant. So when you genetically engineer, you put, let's say, millions of genes into a gene gun and shoot those genes into a plate of millions of cells, then you clone some of those cells into a plant. The process of insertion, whether done by gene gun or bacterial infection, plus cloning, can change the DNA of the and the gene expression of the plant in all sorts of random ways. You can have hundreds or thousands of mutations up and down the DNA. Hundreds or thousands of genes can change their levels of expression. Now, to make this practical, Monsanto's corn, which is on the market for years, was never tested properly before it got on the market, but independent scientists decided to just check what's the difference in gene expression in the natural corn genes. And they found, for example, 43 genes that were either turned on or turned off or changing their level of expression, including one that's normally silent in corn that now in Monsanto's corn produces an allergen. So people, allergens are very dangerous and can cause anaphylactic shock, which can cause people to actually die. There's an allergen in Monsanto's corn that's not found in natural corn, that's unlabeled and wasn't even discovered before the corn was put on the market. In Monsanto's soybeans, there's a known allergen called trypsin inhibitor, which is normally broken down by cooking, but not in their GM soy very much. It's as much as 7 times higher than the natural soybeans trypsin inhibitor after cooking. And so now you have this very dangerous soy allergen, which can also block digestion of proteins and cause all sorts of organ problems as a result. So this is the massive collateral damage that's just generic. Another category is that they found in 2004 that the gene inserted into soybeans, making the soybeans Roundup ready, transferred into the DNA of gut bacteria of human subjects. Now, this means long after we stop eating genetically modified crops, if the transferred genes function inside us, they may continue to produce things like Roundup Ready genes or even the BT toxin, turning our intestinal flora into living pesticide factories. So that's an extremely dangerous, potentially long-term impact from eating GMOs on the short term. We also have significant changes in the nutrition makeup, in the RNA, etc., and all of these can potentially do what's called epigenetic changes, which means eating GMOs could theoretically change the expressions of our genes, N for pregnant women, the expressions of the genes for the offspring and their offspring. So it's a potentially inheritable trait for generations. And then there's other things which get to be too technical, but there's ways that when you put a gene in to a new organism, you expect it to operate the same. It turns out it doesn't always, and a harmless protein can turn deadly. That has been verified. So they're really playing a kind of a genetic roulette with this, forcing this technology onto the market long before the science was ready, but in time to reap profits from patents. And that's the big shame here. The technology is not ready for prime time. It's very, very dangerous, and yet it's already in our food.
So Can you just repeat what you said a little earlier about poking holes and around, and particularly what you said around pregnant women when they eat corn and soy, which has that BT toxin in it? Because that's
right.
Such an important point, and I just want you to reiterate that and the consequences, because what I hear you saying is it can damage our gut and the blood-brain barrier by poking holes, dissolving parts of those barriers, which has, you know, incredible consequences to our health, but particularly the health of newborns.
You know, it's interesting. You heard it a little differently than I said it, but you just added another risk, which I didn't say and haven't even discussed. Ever. So I'm going to talk about that now. Let's build to that.
Okay, you know what? Jeffrey, let's do this. Let's take a break, and then when we come back, then we can just run with this information for the rest of the show, okay?
Great, sure.
Okay, so hang on tight, everyone. We're about to take a break. We are talking to Jeffrey Smith. You can see why he's such a powerful and dynamic advocate for awakening us to what's happening with our food supply through this invasion of GMOs. He is the author of Seeds of Deception and Genetic Roulette, and the executive director of the Institute for Responsible Technology. Don't go away. We have so much more important information to share with you. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and you are listening to What Women Must Know. Hi, and welcome back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know, and we are having the most profound conversation today with Jeffrey Smith, who is an international best-selling author, award-winning filmmaker, executive director of the Institute of Responsible Technology, and the leading spokesperson on the health dangers of GMOs. So, Jeffrey, we were talking about the dangers of some of the toxins inserted into particularly corn and soy, and you were going to elaborate.
Yes. So there's a soil bacteria called Bacillus thuringiensis, or BT for short, and you can use this soil bacteria as a spray in your garden to kill insects. And the way it kills the insects is that the toxin pokes holes in the stomachs of the insects and destroys their digestive tract, and then they die. Now, it washes off the crop and biodegrades. So even organic agriculture can use BT toxin, but it won't be on the crops that you eat, or if it's there, it's in tiny, tiny amounts. Now, in the case of genetic engineering, they insert the gene that produces the toxin into corn and cotton, and they allow it on the food supply, in the food supply, because of a assumption by the biotech industry and the U.S. government that the BT toxin is completely inert and benign for human and mammal cells. They say it only functions with insects. It turns out that's not true. Even the natural function, the natural BT in the soil has been found to evoke immune responses in humans and animals and to cause organ damage, and raised red flags with experts, but not by those who are profiting from the distribution. Now, more recently, they found that the BT toxin, when exposed to human cells, and this is the BT toxin in the crops. Now, in the crops, it doesn't wash off. It doesn't biodegrade. It's produced at a concentration that's thousands of times greater than the spray. So we really get a huge dose of BT toxin if we eat the corn that produces the toxin. They exposed the BT toxin from Monsanto's corn to human cells in test tubes and found that it did in fact poke holes in human cells, causing leakage. And if this occurs inside our gut, first of all, it might damage the gut walls. In fact, BT toxin has been found to damage the microvilli of the intestines, which are the absorbing fingers coming off the walls, but it might also poke holes in human cells, allowing undigested food protein to go through the barrier into the bloodstream. It's only a one cell thick barrier. Now, it's expected that it would allow things to go into the bloodstream because that's one thing that how it kills insects, that it allows products to go from the gut of the insect into the other parts of the insect which turn toxic and can help kill the insect. So if you poke holes in the cell walls, that can be called leaky gut. Now, leaky gut is identified by many practitioners as linked to inflammation, food allergies, autoimmune disease, cancer, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and autism, among others. So we may be creating leaky gut by eating Monsanto's or Syngenta's, for example, BT corn, which can be poking holes in our gut walls. And if the BT gene transfers to gut bacteria living inside us and continues to function, then we may be producing this hole-poking toxin 24/7 from inside our own digestive tract. Now, we know that the BT toxin ends up in the blood. It was found in about two-thirds of the samples for women and 93% of pregnant women. And we know that the BT toxin in the blood of mice damages red blood cells. So we may end up with damaged blood in North America from eating so much BT corn. And then it's also found in 80% of the unborn fetuses, and the fetuses do not have blood-brain barriers well developed. So if you have something circulating in the blood of the fetus, it could end up in the brain of the fetus. So here we have a hole-poking toxin that's also known to be an allergen that could end up in the brains of the fetuses. Now, you mentioned something that it's possible that the BT toxin could actually help destroy or poke holes in the blood-brain barrier, and that's also possible. And it's not something that I've actually discussed yet, but you raised that point. See, in an infant, in the fetus, they don't have a blood-brain barrier well developed. But in the case, for example, of infants when it's developing, the consumption of BT toxin might actually disturb that blood-brain barrier if it is exposed to this hole-poking toxin. So in addition to the BT toxin, the Roundup and the Roundup Ready, soy, corn, cotton, canola, sugar beets, that can also promote leaky gut because Roundup is an antibiotic, a broad-spectrum antibiotic, and what it does is it kills the lactobacillus and the bifidobacteria in the gut, the healthy gut bacteria, causing an overgrowth of negative gut bacteria, and that can produce something called zonulin, which can then cause gaps in the cells, between the cells, along the digestive tract. So the Roundup might cause leaky gut in the gaps between the cells. The BT toxin may cause leaky gut by poking holes in the cells themselves. And either way, you end up exposing our bloodstream to the food, chemicals, and bacteria that are supposed to be in the gut and not in the blood.
You know, that's so interesting because we have an epidemic of autoimmune diseases, and autoimmune diseases all originate with leaky gut, with undigested foods escaping out of the gut into the bloodstream and overwhelming the immune system. So I think there are over 300 and more being named every day conditions that are recognized as autoimmune conditions, which is a huge, huge problem. Everything from MS to Parkinson's to, inflammatory conditions, Hashimoto's. I mean, the list goes on and on, 300 of them. And what I hear you saying is this could be one of the causes directly related to this widespread consumption of GMO foods, even by the mothers of fetuses and babies.
And I hear this from practitioners all the time who are prescribing non-GMO diets and who are very aware of the leaky gut aspect of society today. They swear that it's GMOs that are a primary cause of leaky gut because when they take GMOs out of the diet, it's much easier to heal the leaky gut. Sometimes it heals right away. I've heard from so many people about gastrointestinal disorders healing after removing GMOs. It's the number one most consistent symptom set that I hear when I've asked audiences of close to 100 lectures. We're talking inflammatory bowel, irritable bowel, constipation, gut pain, acid reflux, and this whole leaky gut thing is also related to mental conditions because of the gut-brain axis. And then in addition to the leaky gut, you have gut bacteria, which is now a huge topic on the cutting edge from so many scientists and medical practitioners the gut bacteria health is critical, and Roundup is a killer of the beneficial gut bacteria, not of E. coli, salmonella, and botulism, the negative stuff, but of the positive stuff, the kind of gut bacteria that reduces inflammation. So we have a situation where the gut bacteria, which is part of our immune system and digestive system, get dismantled. Roundup also attacks and hurts the walls of the microvilli in a fish study. It also suppresses digestive enzymes, causing slower digestion. It also blocks the ability of the gut bacteria to produce tryptophan. Now, tryptophan is primarily produced in the gut by gut bacteria, and then it is a precursor to serotonin and melatonin. And without a sufficient tryptophan, you end up with a deficiency of serotonin and melatonin, and of course you can describe what that means for mood, behavior, and sleep, and also the satiation when eating. So serotonin helps you determine that you've eaten enough and you don't have to eat any more, and it also relates to stress levels, depression, etc. And melatonin is related to insomnia. Now, in addition to all of that, Roundup binds with nutrients like trace minerals, making them unavailable. And when we have lower trace minerals, there's important metabolic pathways that are completely shut down because they need these keys in the lock in order to get moving. For example, it helps to dismantle what's called the CYP enzymes, which are used for detoxing. So that if your liver is unable to detox properly, then most other toxins in the environment can be amplified in their impact in the presence of Roundup, because Roundup could be preventing or inhibiting the liver's ability to detox. And it also can work with certain dangerous minerals like arsenic. It was just the subject of a study that came out where it looks like it binds with arsenic, gets through the liver into the kidneys, and then it unbinds because of the acidic nature of the kidney, and now you have two toxins in the kidney, arsenic and Roundup, and that this is probably responsible for an epidemic of death from kidney disorders in areas where they use Roundup to spray on sugar plantations to dry the sugar cane before harvest, and there's as much as a 25% death rate among the male workers in these areas in Central America who apply a lot of Roundup and end up on kidney failure, unable to get dialysis. So that study just came out this year. So there's a whole list of biochemistry related problems by eating this extremely dangerous chemical that's the active ingredient in Roundup.
You know, it's really interesting you mentioned these CYP genes. I do a lot of nutrigenomic testing, and occasionally I can do three generations, grandparents, parents, and children. And when I have a chance to do that, and I've done the genomic test on 8-month-old babies, for instance, and what I observe is that each generation have inherited more and more compromised gene expressions, and I particularly see it with detox genes. So they're more impaired. They're unable to break down, tear apart these toxins, these fat-soluble toxins. And as you said, they then go down different pathways and get amplified into more toxic versions. So I'm observing that. For whatever reason, and I'm sure it's related to everything you've been talking about, but I actually see it through this testing that I do.
Very, very interesting. I mean, and that's the first I've heard of that multi-generational genomic testing showing the progressive impairment of this, but it makes complete sense. Roundup wasn't even introduced as an herbicide, and it wasn't even patented until 1974. So the grandparents had very little exposure to it, and now the exposure's increased because Roundup is not only used on Roundup-ready crops, but as I mentioned, it's used as a ripening agent, not just on sugar, but also on 100 different other products. So it's used on wheat. It's used on rye, on barley, on lentils. It's used on potatoes and sweet potatoes and citrus groves, on berries. And so the load of Roundup is now so high in the environment, it's found in air samples and rain samples as well as water samples. at frighteningly high levels. It's found in the urine of city dwellers in Europe. It's found in the urine of people in the United States. So it's something that can be creating a chronic situation for, as I say, as we talked about, increasing the toxicity of all of these other poisons, but also impairing, you know, L-tryptophan production, serotonin, et cetera, causing, you know, it's a very, very potent antibiotic. We have to get a prescription for most antibiotics, and here's one that's absolutely huge in its power, and it's just sprayed liberally and sold in the store for you to just spray in bare feet, you know, on your lawn, and it's a terrible antibiotic.
So is there anything else you can add when we look at the health consequences that directly impact hormones?
Oh, yeah. And we'd have to end with some good news. So let's make sure you eat it all and you die, goodbye. No, there's
no.
Good news.
We will.
Yes. There was a study done with rats where they found that the female rats had higher levels of testosterone and the male rats had higher levels of estrogen. And this was rats that were fed either Roundup Ready corn that had been sprayed with Roundup, but also rats that ate the corn without having been sprayed with Roundup and rats that ate the Roundup without the corn. So both had this effect of causing a wrong direction of the gender type hormones. One of the ways that that works is that it interferes with the production of aromatase, which is, you know, which then is a precursor to estrogen and testosterone. There's also a recent study that showed that Roundup or its active ingredient glyphosate may act as an excitotoxin in the brain related to glutamate. So we have another way that it might cause mental conditions. People have glutamate sensitivity, MSG, et cetera. Here's a related function that just came out this month in a study where they looked at the causative factors of the Roundup's problems. There's also other hormonal problems that can occur that are buried within these studies by Anthony Samsel and Stephanie Seneff. And that gets very thick biochemistry. But that's where they talk about cholesterol sulfate transport and this thing and that thing. I mean, it gets the easiest way to get into that is to watch my interview of Stephanie Seneff for their first paper and just go to YouTube and enter Seneff, S-E-N-E-F-F, and Jeffrey Smith and glyphosate or Roundup. Glyphosate is actually the active ingredient in Roundup, and it'll come right up. It's an hour and 5 minute talk. It's been seen by 90,000 people, and it really sheds light on what's going on with Roundup, and it'll include some hormonal issues as well.
Actually, I did see that, and it's very compelling. I think we all need to get as educated about this as possible. So let's move into the good news. I know you were talking about creating a master plan to end GMOs. Let's talk about that.
Absolutely. Now, by this time, I'm sure many of your listeners are wondering, you know, what damage they've done already and how they can reverse damage and what they can do. And it turns out just by telling the truth and sharing what we know about GMOs, people want to avoid them. And we haven't gone into the heavy-handed tactics of how they've attacked scientists and tried to distort or deny their findings and cause scientists to be gagged and fired and threatened and all that, and how they rigged their research. But just that's the dark underbelly of all this in terms of how this stuff has gotten on the market and been promoted often through fraudulent means. So we have a situation where it's easy to convince people to avoid GMOs or to try their best to avoid GMOs, and that has now had profound consequences for the fate and fortunes of GMOs. We have tipped the scales. We've hit a tipping point in the natural products industry with so many conscious people about GMOs that it's become a clear marketing liability to use GM ingredients in stores like Whole Foods and other healthy mom-and-pop stores and chains. It's just absolutely being drummed out of the natural food industry as fast as people can get verified by the non-GMO project. has over 16,000 products verified. Thousands are in the pipeline. Now, we've already seen a tipping point against bovine growth hormone in the United States. Several years ago, kicked out of Walmart, Starbucks, Yoplait, Danone, and most American dairies. And we saw a tipping point against all GMOs in Europe in 1999 when a high-profile scientist's gag order was ungagged, and he was able to talk about the dangers of GMOs for the first time. And that caused headlines throughout Europe, but not the United States. And within 10 weeks, Unilever, then Nestle, then virtually every other food company committed to stop using GM ingredients. So we have histories of tipping points up to this point, and now Grape Nuts has just declared its products non-GMO Project Verified for the original brand. Target will be non-GMO in its home brand this year. Cheerios has its original brand non-GMO. Smart Balance will be non-GMO. Ben & Jerry's, Chipotle's will be non-GMO. So there's some test cases out there outside the natural food industry of non-GMO products declaring themselves as such. So these test cases can become extremely significant once we move the needle on sales towards more sales of the non-GMO product and less sales for the GMO-laden product in the conventional supermarkets. So if we see Grape Nuts increase in market share and, you know, winning out against the GMO-laden products, the rest of the food industry realizes they can't afford to wait till their competitor becomes non-GMO first in their product category. They've got to switch to non-GMO to protect sales. So in the future, in 100 years, when they look back and figure out what it was that saved the genetic integrity of our food supply and our ecosystem, because once you release this stuff into the environment, you can't fully recall it. It just self-propagates as part of the gene pool forever. But they'll look back and say it was actually probably sales of Grape Nuts at Walmart that actually saved the planet, which is an ironic and crazy thing. So what we're doing at the Institute for Responsible Technology is we're targeting demographic groups that shop in conventional supermarkets who are most likely to react to our messaging. And that, of course, is moms, first and foremost, and also now pet owners, because of the dramatic changes we're hearing in dogs and cats and even horses who have switched to non-GMO diets. Also, religious people, people of certain faiths that are told by their faith or their religious leaders that GMO means God move over, and it's not something to be dabbling in. And then there's the health educators, the healthcare practitioners, and chronically ill people. So people suffering from the specific diseases and disorders that we believe are related to GMOs. And so we have things like glutenandgmos.com, where people can go there and see the relationship between GMOs and gluten sensitivity. Even though wheat is not genetically engineered, the consumption of GMOs may facilitate reactions to gluten and the whole cascade of symptoms related to that and celiac. So we want to get the information out to these groups to create a tipping point during this window of opportunity when you have groups like Grape Nuts and Cheerios out there declaring non-GMO. Because this really is the window, the most important window of opportunity we've seen in the history, and certainly in my 18 years working on this issue, and probably in the history of anti-GMO work in the country and possibly the world. So we're raising money to build our staff levels up so that we can do a proper outreach to these demographic groups. People can make donations at responsibletechnology.org, and while there, absolutely sign up for our newsletter, so we can become a click-and-send non-GMO revolutionary by sharing and posting everything we send. And also we have a Tipping Point Network where people can join with others to help get the word out in their community, more than 100 groups in the United States, about 10,000 people. And we've trained close to 1,000 people to speak on GMOs, and we're having another speaker training coming up soon. And I conduct that online through webinar. So we have a lot of opportunities for people to get involved. And right now, the key to stopping GMOs is simply to provide more staff time and produce more materials to get out to these targeted demographic groups to drive GMOs out of the market, and to do that very soon.
Okay, so let's give some of these links, because you have a tremendous amount of educational material. And we'll start with the website to Responsible Technology. So I'll just let me say that. It's responsibletechnology.org. So that would be one of the important websites to go to for education, correct?
Correct. Now, if you want a quick education, if you want, like, watch a film and or if you want to share this with others, let's say, you know, you want to give someone a film to watch that you know is going to be the most effective way to convert someone to a non-GMO diet. Well, we've done this test, and the most effective film is Genetic Roulette, The Gamble of Our Lives, and that's available at geneticroulettemovie.com, and it won Movie of the Year and Transformational Film of the Year, and has been very effective in groups to change their diet immediately so that they go home and then change what, you know, some people just throw out stuff in their cabinets. Others just, you know, replace them as they go away. But that tends to be the most effective way to get people to change.
And what about the GMO shopping guide? Let's go for that
right.
one. The non-GMO shopping guide.
Non-GMOshoppingguide.com. Non-GMOshoppingguide.com. You can pull up the categories of you know, baked goods and snacks and breads and whatever, and you can see which are non-GMO project verified, and that's available again, non-GMO shopping guide.com, and the iPhone application, totally free, called Shop No GMO.
So then you can just have it on your phone, and you'll know exactly what you can buy and what you can't.
Right, and also, if something doesn't say non-GMO project verified, it might be self-verified, so it might be the company just declaring it non-GMO. You don't quite know the standard, but it's certainly better than nothing. You can also buy organic products that are not allowed to use GMOs. You can buy, and you can avoid the at-risk ingredients, and the shopping guide has 50 at-risk ingredients. Now, there's only 9 GMO food crops, but there's a lot of derivatives of soy and corn, some with long names, and then you also have certain things which, like aspartame, comes from a genetically modified bacteria. So you have that's listed there as well, and we strongly recommend that people learn about the dangers of aspartame. Just Google aspartame and symptoms, and you probably will never have aspartame again.
Absolutely. So you've really given us not just the big story, Jeffrey, but you've given us, you know, proactive steps that we can take to get educated, to make the best choices. And then if you address some of these health concerns that may have been caused or aggravated from exposure to these substances, we can heal them. And we have ways to support the body in recovering. So you've got to remove it, and then you've got to heal the damage that was caused or the compromised functioning. So, the good news is that we are getting more awakened, we're getting more empowered, and as the numbers increase, we can initiate change. I mean, if Grape Nuts is going along for the ride and so is Cheerios, something has happened to make those huge, huge multinationals change course.
Absolutely. And I want to say that when people get rid of GMOs, when they notice changes, and many, many people notice changes, even energy level, brain fog, I hear that a lot, skin conditions, weight problems. A lot of people are able to lose weight on non-GMO diets where they couldn't lose weight on GMO diets. Then send us a note. Just email us at healthy@responsibletechnology.org. healthy@responsibletechnology.org. I read those. We catalog them. We're going to be using them to help inform practitioners about the case studies related to GMOs and to inform further research.
So one last question before we have to wind up our most enlightening conversation today. Talk about the training session that you're going to be doing, educating people to be educators.
Well, we have PowerPoint slides that are fully scripted, and I help people understand the backstory about the different research that we're going to be presenting through these slides. I answer questions, and we've been doing this both live in person and online for a few years. It's very popular, and I just have to schedule the next one. I just haven't gotten around to scheduling it, but once I schedule it, I'm changing up the format, making the talk actually simpler, because we have more information. We have the complementary information between the pets and the livestock and the humans and the whatnot. So it's a lot easier to present now, and we're going to be giving that update fairly soon. So if you sign up for the newsletter, then we'll announce the shop, we'll announce the speaker training through the newsletter subscription.
That's wonderful, because that's a fantastic way to give people enough information so they are able to communicate what the real story is with enough of the facts, and people will listen. And that's what it takes. It's really a grassroots movement, because obviously the system is corrupt, the government is corrupt, all these agencies are corrupt, and we need people power to begin to move things to a healthier direction, save our health, save our lives, save the planet, as we say. Well, Jeffrey Smith, this has been such an enlightening conversation. I just want to thank you for the tireless work you've done on bringing this awareness out into the world. We're all very, very grateful to you. So we just wish you the best of everything.
Thank you so much.
And to everyone listening, thank you. I am sure you have just been, you know, shaken into awakeness about what's happening here. We have to wake up. This is a huge issue. So take it to heart. Go through those websites that Jeffrey shared with us. And certainly pick up his book, Seeds of Deception and Genetic Roulette. Watch that movie. It's fantastic. So until next time, remember to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.